This is gonna be. I'm excited about this episode just because, like, we've been wanting to do something that was more than just kind of like, "Hey, what's your trans experience like?"
Right.
You know, we say that over and over and over, and we get the same questions, the same answers. Well, no, I take back. We get everybody's different, but it's everybody's different, just like everybody else.
Right. Exactly.
So maybe we'll figure. You know what? Let's figure it out.
Yeah, whatever works.
Hold on, let me pop
shine,
one of my
shine on the fly.
Oh, I miss these NAs.
I miss vaping so much. Oh my god,
I need to fucking quit.
I need to.
I had to quit for surgery, and then you know, which I can do no problem, which is weird. But then, like, ugh, I miss it so much.
I quit.
I've been like 7 months so far, and wow. I need to stop because.
I quit and then on Christmas, like I didn't do it. I did it on Thanksgiving and then I quit for like 3 weeks. And then on Thanksgiving or on Christmas, I just thought about my ex-wife and her new boyfriend, how mm-hmm. they're in love. And I was just like, I need something.
I got you.
So
FML.
Great.
Yeah.
So anywho, people told me that it was not going to help my healing. Okay.
Right. That was a big proponent in me stopping. Like, it's funny though, like, cause in recovery, like so many people smoke cause it's like the vice. So I see it everywhere.
Yeah. I meant to throw these away when I left for New York, but I didn't. Whoops. Cool. So Bree, you went, does that sound like, sound like this? You want to do the intro?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Girl Dad Girls. I'm one of your hosts, Bree St. Marie. We have Danielle Breer, and we have Quinn Gage. Welcome. How you doing?
Hi. So happy to be here.
Good. Yeah, why don't we start with just a little Reader's Digest about who Quinn is?
Sure. So I am 29 years old.
Years young.
Yeah, 29 years young. I'm about to be 30 in March, which for me feels old. I know it's not, but, you know, it's a big number. I live in Connecticut. I guess a little bit about me in my trans experience. When I was 24, I decided to come out. And I've been on HRT for about 4.5 years now.
That's
awesome. Currently work in sobriety, so I work in recovery. I work as a house manager of a women's sober house.
Thank you for doing that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's an experience for sure. And it feels cool to be like a trans woman, like running a house like that. You know what I mean? It feels special. Yeah. And I'm trying to not take it for granted. There's 13 girls there right now and everybody's got their own story and it's, you know, it's a lot, but luckily through my experience, you know, I feel like I have enough to offer and to bring to the table. I grew up, you know, I was like, I think I was cross-dressing on my own accord when I was like 3 or 4. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And yeah, you know, from there it just kind of manifested, and I kind of buried it away. I was good at wearing a mask. I grew up, you know, doing masculine things, sports. You know, I never played with Barbies. I never did that kind of stuff. But you know, there was always a part of me that felt different. Every birthday wish, you know, I wish I was a girl. Like, God, why can I wake up as a girl? You know, those kind of thoughts. And it made it really confusing. You know, I went away to college and I remember the moment, like I joined a fraternity and I was going through like pledging, South. And it was like that real pledging.
What fraternity?
Sigma Chi.
Oh, okay. I was Sig Ep for a while.
Oh my God.
Oh,
my
really?
Brother's Sigma Chi.
Oh, let's go, baby.
Las Vegas.
Oh. Wow. Yeah, I was at the College of Charleston in South Carolina. So
okay.
Definitely a different experience being down south.
For oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, obviously in Virginia, but
oh, yeah.
I realized it was just everybody's always like, you're renting or you're buying your friends, you're buying your friends. Like, no, you're renting your friends because as soon as you stop paying, they're not yours anymore.
I know that's such a typical line, you're buying your friends. I had a semester there without pledging, and all of my friends that I made who weren't pledging ended up pledging Sigma Chi. So I was like, okay,
yeah.
Why not? My dad was in a fraternity,
Yeah, I mean, like I was in a band, and like three of the guys in the band were like, they all joined Sig Ep, and so I was like, okay. And then I realized I freaking hated it. So I quit. Yeah. And it's so funny how like these people who are your brothers, and then you stop being part of the brotherhood, and they don't even know who you are anymore.
Right. It's like as soon as you get through pledging, all of a sudden they're super nice instead of, you know, being blindfolded for 16 hours sitting in a dark room listening to the same song on repeat, you know, being like kicked for getting a brother's full name wrong when they're yelling in your face. And then like, you know, you finish pledging and they're like, yo, what's up? And I'm like,
it's insane. Yeah.
It just confirmed how like that. I was like, what am I doing? Like, I'm not a man. Like, what am I fucking doing here? The toxic masculinity was like ridiculous.
Isn't it though? Yeah, it really, I mean, it like, I always thought that I was just kind of like a wuss because I was like, I never wanted to do all the things the boys were doing.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, I must just be a weirdo. But, yeah, like I never wanted to
fall. We all kind of feel that. We all feel that like disconnect. And there was a moment in college, I remember, where I just kind of word vomited into Google. I was like, I'm a boy and I like girls and I like doing guy stuff and I talk, I don't know, like all this stuff, but I feel like I'm trans. And I hit enter and I remember finding like forums, like some like on Reddit, some on other pages of people with the same experience. And I remember just crying and I was like, wow. And there was like this sigh of relief. It was like, oh my God, finally. Okay. I'm trans. And then like 13 seconds later was like, oh shit. I'm trans.
I'm trans.
Isn't,
oh, fuck.
Isn't
I'm
that
trans.
Weird? Yeah. Like, it's like
very much like that.
Like that's crazy that you got to that point, like by yourself. Cause I feel like mine, it took like three or four people to like push me to that line of like being able to admit it. Because I was like, I don't know. It's like when Brie makes me give myself shots. I'm just like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. And then somebody's like, do it. Do it, Pansy.
Yeah.
I'm like,
I can't do it. I can't do my own estrogen shots. I have to go.
Night.
It's terrifying. And it takes me so long. Brie just sits there like a little freaking masochist. And just, oof.
Yeah, I can't do it. I cannot do it.
So we did want to like, for those who are listening, hey everybody, we did want to like, do an episode, and, Quinn seems like a really great person to do this on, is like, talking about addictions. And, I know that Brie and I have suffered with some for me more recently than others, but, I guess Quinn, do you mind like going into like your experience with it, with like an addiction, and just tell us about like, I guess how you got into what you do and whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely. So like, you know, I mean, a lot of like, I feel like a lot of addiction stems from like burying or like hiding things or, you know, escaping. That's really what it is. It's escapism in one way or another. You know, and for a while I found that like, you know, I started smoking weed in high school, you know, started doing it every day senior year. And then, you know, drinking, of course. And then when I got to college and I pledged the fraternity, we had to memorize, you know, every brother's parents' full names, their hometowns, their middle names in like a week on top of schoolwork. And so, you know, I'd never taken anything else, but someone offered me Adderall. And I took it, and it was that like Bradley Cooper in Limitless type feeling, you know, and I was like, wow, I can do anything. And from there, it just kind of took off, you know, it made me more confident. It made me feel like less like self-conscious of like who I was. But then I found like through smoking on Adderall that my constant thought was like, everybody knows I'm trans. Like I sound feminine, I'm doing this. And it freaked me out. So to counteract that, I started taking Xanax. And from there, it just kind of took off, you know, escaping everything I could, all the anxieties I felt, you know, realizing I was trans and being like I said, oh, I'm trans. And then, oh, fuck, I'm trans. And just almost trying to bury that part of me down.
What almost sounds like it's one of those like, okay, we have mice. So we got snakes to get rid of the mice. Now we got dogs to get rid of the snakes. Now we got bears to get rid of the dogs. And it's like,
right. It's one replacing the other. That's what addiction is, you know? I mean, I was addicted to lotto tickets at one time, you know? I mean, I was selling drugs and meeting people, and I would go to the gas station and give them like $600 and just get a bunch of tickets and just scratch them off. It was like, I needed more.
$600 on scratchers?
What's that?
$600 on scratchers?
Yeah. Damn. I know. Okay. Well, I got to a point where I was selling a lot of drugs, and down south especially it was dangerous, you know, one pill is like a felony charge. And I had, you know, hundreds to thousands at some point, and that was like for control for me. I felt like as dealing, like I could control the situation. I felt more in control of like how people treated me, you know, people were like nicer to me, people wanted to be around me, and like That was huge for me. That's what I wanted. That's what I wanted to feel like confirmed.
Yeah.
And it's always the disease of more. You know, you want more, and it's replacing one with with another, like Danny said. From Xanax, it turned into painkillers, and from painkillers, it turned into heroin and fentanyl, and I moved back home, and I was, you know, heavily addicted to that stuff for a few years, still denying who I was, burying that part of me down. Overdosing in my parents' house, waking up, you know, lucky.
Can I ask you a question? So I've, you know, of course, like watched like Dope Sick and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But like, I don't fully grasp like the, cause you know, everybody's taking, oxycodone and that mm-hmm. dope stick, the painkillers, the jump from that to heroin seems like that's a common jump. Mm-hmm. Is that, I guess what is the link between those two that makes heroin like a substitute for, is heroin a painkiller?
Yeah. So, heroin is an opiate. It's basically just a stronger version or like a street version of what the pharmaceutical companies make. It all comes from opiates, oxys, you know, Percocet, Vicodin, all that stuff is, has opiates in it. And basically what it does in your brain is it floods it with dopamine, and that's what we want. That was the disease of more, you know, more of that. More dopamine equals better feelings. And for most people, what I've seen in recovery and working with people in recovery, and for me, you know, it was painkillers, and painkillers were like $30 a piece. And that was expensive. And then eventually you go to your dealer, they're out of painkillers, but they have heroin. And you're like, I can't go through withdrawals, so I got to get this heroin. And then from there, it just, you know, it's kind of like you said, replacing snakes with bears, et cetera.
Yeah. It seems like it's one of those, it's like that need to get, you know, to, and it's not even like to not feel pain, but just sort of like to get back to that, like that happy place. And I feel like I know a bunch of trans women who, for one reason or another, I feel like it's like society is basically making us feel horrible about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of, I know for me personally, like alcohol, I was a massive alcoholic for a while. And for me, alcohol was like a time machine. Like it made every second go by twice as fast.
Right.
And so I was like, I can get by this boring part of my life by drinking. And yeah, and it made like it, you know, the confidence came in and I could do a lot more stuff, even though, you know, working in software, I'd write a bunch of stuff when I was drunk and then I'd go back the next day and be like, this is all garbage.
Yeah.
But
oh, yeah.
At the time it was great. It was brilliant. Probably like all my pickup lines and everything. That makes sense about the link between painkillers and heroin. It's like, I had always thought that like people who got addicted to painkillers got like, they were like in pain and that, you know, they just kept realizing that they need more and more painkillers to get, to get rid of it. But it's like, but you know, that whole like, that feeling of, I need this, even though you realize you don't need it. But like, I know for me that happened, I guess back in September when I stopped drinking, is I was actually, and hopefully they don't get mad at me, but it was a Monday and I was drinking at work. I had a 1.5 liter bottle of wine and, you know, went and filled up a glass. I was like, I'm just going to have one glass like at like 8 o'clock in the morning. And then I was like, I got back to my desk and I was like, okay, I kind of feel kind of good because I work from home. So I was like, well, you know, maybe like half an hour later, I was starting to die down a little bit. Let's go, you know, get a little one more sippy sip. And about halfway through that bottle, I was walking back past like my laundry room and was like, I can't stop.
Yeah.
Like I need to stop, but I can't stop. Something is pulling me. Like if I stop, I'm going to feel bad.
Like that's the worst feeling is when you want to stop, but you know you can't. Because eventually it wasn't about getting high for me. It was about not going through withdrawals. Because you can't die from opiate withdrawals, but you definitely feel like you are. Like it's the worst flu. And with alcohol, you can die from the withdrawals if it's severe enough. Same with Xanax. It's usually seizure induced when people drink heavy amounts consistently all day and then, you know, go to try and stop. It depends on the person, but yeah, they have, you know, the shakes and seizures and it can mess you up.
Yeah. So that actually happened to me. I had alcohol withdrawals 3 times within a year period. I was to a point where I was too scared to quit because I knew that I had tipped over into dependency. Mm-hmm. And I eventually did quit. The first time was not of my own volition. I had just gotten a stomach ulcer and I couldn't take anything in anymore. That is when I had probably the most terrifying withdrawal symptoms you can possibly imagine, like visual, auditory, it was all there.
Oh, wow.
And the second time and I did that all on my own, no hospital visit. I probably was pretty close to dying on that one. Second time I did seize out and I hit my head on the windowsill on the way down, cracked it wide open. I woke up to paramedics in my house, just sticky, covered in blood. I did go to the hospital for that one and got some benzos. And, then the third time I didn't even know I had, tipped over into dependency again, cause it had only been like 2 months. But I was going through a handle every 2 days and I was like, extremely high functioning, like operating around a 0.35, 0.4, I felt normal. It was when I started getting sober is when I started feeling fucked up. And I was drinking at work, just nipping at that thing all day long. And I would drink till I'd pass out when I got home. And when I woke up at 4 a.m, I'd go back and hit it again till I passed out again until later in the day. And this was all with my ex-wife who had no fucking clue.
Yeah.
Nobody knew.
I mean,
when you're high functioning, it's scarier because it's like, look at me doing all this stuff. Like, I'm accomplishing this. Like, I'm doing this. I'm successful in this. Like, why should I stop drinking? You know, like, yeah. I'm not like those addicts. That's the problem, too, is there's a ton of, like, stigma and stereotyping that goes along with addiction. You know, I mean, even for me, before I realized I was an addict, you know, you see AA in movies or NA in movies, and you're like, oh, like, it's the bum on the street with the paper bag. But that's not what it is. You know, once you start to realize, yeah, like, there's people, high-functioning people, a ton of super successful people that are functioning addicts. I mean, look at Chris Herren, the Chris Herren story. He played for the Boston Celtics, and he would meet his dealer in the parking lot. And, you know, he would go and score a triple-double, like, high as a kite. And it's crazy because, like, when you live like that, it's almost like, well, why should I stop?
I'm killing it. So there's no reason to stop.
Yeah, exactly. I was not one of those people. I could not function. My life was broken.
I just always told myself that I could do a lot of things when I was drunk that I, like, you know, you realize after the fact that you just have this, like, you give yourself this confidence boost. Like I used to drink and drive all the time. Like, there were so many times I should have gotten arrested. Like, I remember one time driving home from after taking a bunch of shots, and, like, the car in front of me slammed on its brakes, and I went slightly out of the way, thought I missed everything, got home and woke up the next day, and my tire was just eviscerated from this, because I had hit the curb, and I drove for the next 3 or 4 miles on this tire that was just basically, like, on the hubcap. But I convinced myself, I was like, wow, I'm so, like, oh, I'm so with it. I missed everything. And it's like, no. I hit the curb pretty hard enough to, like, I mean, my car still has an imbalance because of me driving on it for on that little bit. But I just say I hit a pothole. But because, of course, like, admitting that kind of stuff is only what you do on podcasts.
Yeah. So. The thing is, for me, is, like, this is so normal for me. The things you guys are talking about. Like, I live in this, you know, and I see this all the time. And I found that the best way to process it is to share it and be open and honest about it. Because all of us have done things that, to a normal person, you know, might seem ludicrous or crazy. But in sharing, like, with other addicts, you know, that's why it works. You know, we can I mean, I laugh about it, some of the things I've done, you know. I mean, I regret a lot of it, and I have things that haunt me, but, you know, some of the stuff is, it's like, you got to just remember that it's the action, but it's not the person. Because I genuinely believed for years that I was a bad person. That's just how I felt, and it wasn't till about, like, a year and a half sober, my first time getting sober, that I realized, like, someone was, like, wanted to be my friend. And I was like, it, like, blew my mind. I was like, wait, like, what? You know, I was, like, helping people. I was, like, doing good things. I wasn't, like, instantly going to someone's house and, like, checking their purse or checking their medicine cabinet, because it got to that point for me.
Oh, wow.
And it's been a crazy journey, and being trans, I mean, influenced a lot of it, you know, the escapism.
Oh, yeah.
I found that because I got sober after I got sober, and then I came out as trans, and I had, like, a little over a year, and I didn't think that by coming out as trans that I wasn't an addict. But I felt like this immense weight was off my shoulders. It wasn't every thought consuming me every day. I wasn't walking past people, girls being like, why can't I be that person? Or why do I have to live this way? And that was my downfall. I ended up going back to relapsing, and I ended up in, like, a meth-induced psychosis at one point. And I didn't understand that the addiction, although being a part of being trans, like, wasn't, it wasn't the only reason. There's so much that goes into why we're addicts and why we act this way, and why we you know, genetically function as addicts.
I do think, yeah, that there is like a almost like a little nudge that we all get, because I know, especially for like for Bree and myself, I'm not sure your story, but like Bree and I, you know, with our relationships falling apart, it's I know for me, I was drinking heavily before when I was married because I didn't like who I was, and I worked out a whole bunch and got really in shape, and I was like, I liked myself. The bigger I got, the less I liked myself, and so I was like, well, this isn't working. Let's go ahead and just drink through it, and maybe we'll get cirrhosis of the liver and die. But that didn't work either. So, but then, you know, then I realized, like, there's something painful that I'm hiding, and, you know, figured out what it was, but then, you know, compound that with, okay, now I'm getting divorced. All of my friends, treat me like this weird kind of like hybrid person. And, you know, you start realizing like all the things that you used to do to make yourself feel better, hanging out with your friends. I mean, for me, it was hanging out with my wife. All these things that I had as my support network were all gone. And so I went back to drinking because it was like, there's something out there that's going to make me not think about my ex-wife getting porked by her new boyfriend. So yeah, gross.
No, I listen, I lost a relationship that when I had that year and a half sober, I was in a relationship with a girl who I was with before I came out as trans and then after, and that was like a big deal. And I loved her very much. And, you know, when I started doing the drugs again, it like warped my perception, and I cheated on her with men. And I ruined that relationship. And that caused a massive spiral when that is taken away or when that's gone. Yeah, it feeds itself. It feeds the addiction and loneliness. You know, I always hear in the rooms, the opposite of addiction is connection. You know, isolating and being lonely and feeling alone, it just fuels why we use the substance we do.
I always, I mean, I guess kind of like, it's sort of like a relationship. Because I always use the analogy of like for a relationship and why I'm so adverse to them now. But like, it's like you're walking along and somebody comes along and like, they're like, hey, here's this crutch. And you're like, but I don't need it. And they're like, yeah, well, just carry it with you. You may like it. And so you start carrying the crutch and like, okay, this thing's getting a little heavy. Let me try like just walking on it. It's like, oh, actually, this is kind of nice. And then you start depending on it. You need it. And then somebody comes along and takes it away from you. And you're like, oh, I realized I needed that. And, you know, somebody else comes along and they're like, hey, you know, you start to learn to walk again. And somebody comes along and is like, hey, you want another crutch? And you're just like, no, I know what that's going to do.
Right.
That sucks. And, you know, it's like, you know, you're sitting there crawling and you're almost like looking, like begging people for a crutch. Like, please, does anybody have a crutch? And, you know, you're going to go into some dark places. You're willing to do some weird, depraved stuff to get a crutch. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I always likened it for relationships, but it kind of sounds almost like what like addiction to drugs could be too. It's like, I just need something. And like drugs or, you know, your gambling too. Cause I won't say who, but it's somebody very close to me who got really into party poker, and they spent, I think that, you know, they won like $5,000 playing party poker and then ended up like going in the hole, like 32 grand. And just cause they couldn't stop. And it was just like this addiction of like kept needing to gamble. And it was like anything that you could, that this person could bet on, they would do it. And it's like, yeah, I mean, they had to go into rehab for gambling, which, you know, I didn't realize that was a thing.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's crazy. I feel like the trans community, cause we all get sort of pushed away from our connections that we have. Like you were saying, losing all your connections kind of causes you to dig down to, you know, find something, find another crutch, right. Something else that's going to buoy you for a bit. Buoy. I don't know how to say words. excuse me. As people, if you can hear, I sound fucking terrible. Yeah, like, I don't know. And I guess I also wanted to kind of be sort of hopeful, though. I know that we've been kind of down and yeah. sad about stuff. But I did want to kind of go over like some, I mean, obviously saying coping mechanisms is kind of like trite, and it seems like sort of to almost like we're lecturing people. Hey, here's how you get sober. It's like, I don't know. I realized I had a problem. I think what you were saying is admitting it is a big one. Cause I told people, I was like, look, I drank on a weekday and while I was supposed to be at work. And I was like, look, you work can find out and they'll fire me. And that sucks. But, no, at least I'm not hiding it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I agree. Like, you know, for me, like right actually in this desk right here, I have like my 2-year coin and then my 3-year coin.
Because,
thank you. For me, I had 3.5 years the day after Christmas, sober. And you're right. Like there is, there's so much. So in 12-step programs, you know, the first thing they say is like admitting that you're powerless and that your life has become unmanageable, like powerless over the substance that you used. And people see that word and they kind of like back off a little bit. They're like, well, I'm not powerless. You know, I have control over this. And, or they think that by saying they're powerless, that everything is, out of their control. And for me, I found so much power in admitting that I was powerless, because it's not admitting that I'm powerless over everything in existence. It's admitting that I was powerless over this substance that I couldn't stop using. And by admitting that, I gained so many things back. You know, I was able to find a job, find a relationship where I could actually give myself to that person fully, and get so many things back in my life. And yeah, it's like tools. There's tools of recovery. There's so many things that really help. And yeah, admitting that you have a problem is the first part, because it's not just admitting it to other people, it's admitting it to yourself. And that's a tough thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, it was that point when I was walking down the hallway and I said to myself, stop. And then I realized I just kept walking and I was like, I can't stop. And it was that, like, there was almost like this like epiphany moment where I was like, and I didn't stop. I went down and finished that freaking bottle. But it was like that point internally where I was like, I can't stop, and realizing that like, I'm powerless. Yeah. I'm going to go continue to do this thing, but in the future, I'm going to be able to look back and think about this point, this like indelible moment that got stuck in my brain of like, I can't stop doing this. And like, I guess that's kind of I don't know if that's, I think most people, they're supposed to, they tell you to like realize that after you like, you know, sober up and then make that realization. But for me, it was a realization in the moment of like, I didn't stop. Like I said, I kept going. And like, I feel like most, if people can come to that point of being able to say, I'm doing this, I'm going to continue to do this for a little bit longer, but I realize right now, this is that feeling of being powerless, of having something have control over me. You mm-hmm. feel that little monster on your shoulder that's saying, keep doing it, keep going. Admitting that monster's there.
It's not like some people talk about, I've heard people say, like, I woke up one day and I was like, enough is enough, and I'm never used again from that moment on. And to me, you know, maybe for some people, that definitely wasn't my story. it's very similar to yours of, you know, realizing, oh my God, I have a problem. Or this is something I have to, you know, do something about, and not doing it quite in that moment. Because that realization is a big deal, and it doesn't mean that immediately everything is, you know, going to change or whatever. It's a process. It's a journey. All of recovery is a journey, and step by step, you have these moments where you remember, that this was like a turning point, and it wasn't this immediate, like, saw a bright light and everything was better. It's a stepping stone, and you're right, that first part is huge, and it's crucial, because that is the step that eventually will get you moving towards that. You know, for me, again, it was 12 step programs, and I found that the thing that really helped was I realized I didn't have to do it alone. I felt very alone in my addiction, and I felt like nobody had a story like mine. There's actually, this is really interesting, because I found this in the last 6 months. I run a lot of groups at the women's house, and sometimes we read from the program books. And I read a story in the NA program book, and it was called Terminally Unique. And that's a problem that a lot of addicts have, is we feel like nobody is like us. Nobody has our story. Nobody can relate to the things that we've been through. And I read it not knowing what the story was. And the story was about a trans woman trying to get sober and going through life and having to deal with all these problems. And I remember reading it in that group, and I started sobbing like mid-story. I never thought that I would see my story. Mm-hmm. And it, interesting enough, is she had a procedure scheduled for her gender reassignment surgery, and she had to postpone it because there were complications for whatever reason. And I think about my thing with my FFS surgery, having to postpone it because of COVID. You know, it's a little different in the sense that I got it like booked relatively soon after, but you know, that was a moment for me. And it really made me realize I wasn't alone. And as trans people, especially, we feel like our story is so unique and different than other people's. And it's not. We've all been through things that have gotten us to this point. And that's what it's all about, is other people sharing experiences and building hope from that.
And, you know, one of the, I mean, in that same vein, like, I think one of the things that I, like, is I've quit drinking before in the past. And it was like, oh, you know, it's like you stop drinking. Say, like, you know, you stop drinking on a Monday. And then on a Tuesday, you're sort of expecting everybody to come out and, like, you know, heap all this praise on you. Oh, you're so, you know, you're so brave. You're so wise. And it's like one day, like, that's not really that much. You know, it's like, and even I've realized that even like, you know, a week, or I think for me, it's usually happens around like 10 days after stopping drinking. It was like the aggravation. I'd get mad at somebody. And that was my like litmus test. It's like, okay, cool. I've just got really pissed, like irrationally pissed off at somebody and yelled at them. Okay, now I'm over that hurdle. But like even that, it's like I would tell people, it's like, oh, I'm 11 days sober, and they're like, fucking whoop-de-doo, dummy. Like, that's not like, you know, but yeah, I was always kind of like looking for this validation of like, hey, tell me I'm doing something good. Right. And most people are like, why aren't you drinking? Like, oh, well, live in a drinking town. I'm taking money away from the breweries. But yeah, like I just always wanted that validation of, you know, especially a couple days in. I was like, oh yeah, I used to drink every day, and I've gone 3 days, and people are like, cool, you know, make it a month, make it a year. Yeah, I think all the like sober apps have really kind of been helping, because it's like gamifying it a little bit. Although I had to probably had to restart, because may have had a drink in New Year's Eve. But excuse me. But it was only one, and I, yeah, it was just because I was at a bar.
And that's okay. Like, you know, when my, I mean, obviously I'm very invested in 12 step programs, and I'm not here to be like a poster child for it, but, I did find that going to meetings and stuff and people sharing, cause you're right. Normal people are like, whoop-de-doo, you've been sober for 3 days. Going to a meeting and hearing somebody that's been sober 3 days, everybody is like, let's fucking go. Like, yeah, that's a big deal. Because it is for some people. You know, you never realize, like, when you're stuck in addiction, some people have been drinking consistently for 30, 40 years every day. And then they decide to take that step and they're like, you know, I'm 13 days sober. Those are the people that I pay attention to in the room. Because it reminds me what it's like to be there. And it's such a big turning point. And you see sometimes these people that are struggling day by day. And again, some people that aren't addicts may not get that. But like for us, it's a huge accomplishment. You know, I've worked with people that are early in recovery. And every time there's a anniversary for a month, we all like celebrate it because it's a big deal. It really is.
Yeah.
And some people don't get that.
Let me jump in for a second. So I didn't have any in the moment thing. It was my third time detoxing, and my ex-wife told me, this is going to be your last time. If you do it again, we're done. So I went, as chagrined as I was to do it, I went to AA, and it is everything that you've said. Like I walked in, and as bad as I was like, I'm going to be the worst motherfucker in the room. Mm-hmm. And I was so far from it. And it was so humbling because it was in Lakeway, Texas, which is kind of a ritzy area. You walk into this meeting, there's the dude that drove the Lamborghini there to that meeting. And then there's the guy that he picked up that lives under the bridge on the way to the meeting because he doesn't have a car. And they are 3 days in, and you're like, oh, I am so far from the worst person in the room. And it just gives you this uplifting feeling a little bit. And I went to AA for a year. I didn't necessarily resonate with all the whole portion of the program, but it really helped me just being around others that were in the same boat or in a very different boat in that sort of way. But it's, it worked, and I did stop going because COVID happened and they did it over Zoom, and I'm an in-person person. So I did figure out during that time. Right. But in that time I did start going to a therapist and figure out what, you know, like what I was suppressing. And, cause I didn't have an in the moment thing. It was like, I had relegated myself to, I'm dying. I don't know when. I don't know when the cirrhosis is going to happen. We're just going to keep riding this high until I eventually, you know, conquer out. After that, I got sober, and that was 4.5 years ago. And now I'm on bonus time. So we're just figuring out what the hell to do with it.
Yeah. Right? All this time back, all this life.
Yeah.
You know, the rooms are like alcohol, I guess, is the great equalizer, is what some people say, is the person with the Lamborghini or the doctor. I live in a very bougie area of Connecticut on the shoreline. And some of the meetings I go to, you know, these guys are in suits at 7:30 and they're on their way to Wall Street, you know, taking the train to New York. And in the same vein, you know, the person living on the streets that comes into the room, and it's a powerful experience to realize there it alcohol doesn't affect a specific group of people. It can affect anybody. I mean, we saw it when the opiate epidemic came, you know, in the mid 2010s, and you know, I had kids from my high school overdose and die, and you know, I lived in a suburban area, and And when that started happening, unfortunately, that's what it took for people to start realizing that there was a problem. But it affects everybody. You know, I had a childhood that could not have been better. You know, my parents love and support me as a trans woman. I'm so grateful for them. You know, they always gave me everything I needed and wanted. You know, my dad was my little league coach. You know, he's my hero. My mom, a little overprotective, but a great mother. And it still got me, you know, addiction still got me. But the beautiful thing is that there is ways to do it. You know, there's these apps, as Danny was saying, that track days or give you uplifting quotes. There's therapy, that, you know, Bree, you mentioned, like, I'm in therapy, still like every week. And there's the 12-step programs. There's so many ways to do it. And you realize how beautiful it is to have that part of your life back. Cause yeah, you start dying. And it's scary.
I think it's and this kind of actually I'd like to get y'all's opinion on this, but one of the things I got when I first realized that I was like when I made an effort to do it is I found something I think is called like quit drinking without trying or something like that. But essentially, mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard of this book. That's kind of where I got the concept of like a little monster that's sitting on your shoulder. Cause he talks about a little monster and a big monster. But like one of the things that he says, and actually kind of contradicts like a lot of what we've already been saying in this whole thing, is he's like telling yourself that you're powerless almost like makes you feel like it's, I can't remember how he says it, but it's like, don't tell yourself that you're powerless, that you're quitting something, because it's like you're not really quitting something, doing something. You're basically just saying, I'm not going to allow myself to get to that point of throwing up. Like for me, it was always at like one drink was never enough, and one drink was too much, and 30 was never enough. But like he talks about, like you see that person that's stumbling out of the bar at 3 a.m. and throwing up in the alley, and you're like, do you want to be that person? Or like for me, it was going to the brewery on a Friday at lunch, getting two or three beers, going home back to work, and being exhausted for the rest of the day, like kind of like wanting to pass out at 2 o'clock because I couldn't drink anymore. I needed to be at work. And just, it's like now I go to like basically saying, I don't need that first one, because the first one's always the best and the last one's always the worst. Mm-hmm. And so why have the first one? But that's essentially what he says, is like, if you can convince yourself in your head that, and this is, I mean, this obviously is not going in, not delving into the people who are like, you know, the dependency people. I think it's mostly mm-hmm. the people who are like right on that cusp of being dependent on it. But if you can basically say, like, tell yourself, I don't need this one, because this one's going to be the best one ever. This one's going to be the least bad, I guess. And then they just go down from there. Because you're always chasing that high to get back to that same point. But it's like, if you can say, afterwards, I'm going to be really happy I didn't do this. And I remember like there are several times recently that I've been driving home on Friday after not having a beer at the brewery, where I'm just like, I feel like you have so much energy. Mm-hmm. You're just like, I can go, and like, I get home and I don't fall asleep. Yeah. but yeah, like, I mean, and the only reason I bring that up is because it almost kind of contradicts like the 12-step thing of like admitting that you're powerless. Because he's like, he basically says that like you have the power. It's just I can't remember how he says it, but it's like, yeah, you have the power to basically say, I don't want this anymore. And if you can convince yourself that you don't want to be that person hunched over in the corner of the bar throwing up, and just think about that as opposed to thinking about as opposed to thinking about how fun you are when you have that first drink. It's like, it even goes into like how, you know, when you see somebody who's drunk, do you think they're funny? And it's like, probably not. One of the things I tried to do was going to parties without drinking and seeing if I could have the same interactions with people And it's like the first couple of times I was a little bit unsure what to do, what to say. But then I realized I was like being as articulate. I was being more articulate and I was able to tell people the same stories that I told them better stories than I was when I was like, everybody always thinks they're so funny. They're so charming. Yeah. They're so sweet on alcohol. And it's like, no, you're just annoying. And you think everybody thinks you're funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I remember going to parties and being like, this is going to suck. I'm going to hate this. Everyone's going to, I'm not going to want to talk to these people. But it makes you like, for me at least, I cared so much more about what other people were saying. Like when I was drinking, all I could do is think about how I wanted to tell them all these stories. And so them using their face hole to make noise was just time, sucking up time for me to talk as you can tell, I like to talk, but you know, but it made me listen and basically and say, take in the information that they're saying and think, oh wow. Like, this person's actually like kind of interesting. So as opposed to thinking everybody's boring.
Yeah.
So sorry, that was a lot. That was a lot of words.
No, absolutely.
I like to listen.
Yeah, no, and it's true too, because like we realize how much better some things are sober. I've gone to concerts that I used to be, you know, so fucked up for. I had to be, and I've gone sober, and I've realized how much fun it is. But I didn't like, I couldn't imagine that. I was on my way there, and I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. This is going to be hard. But like, you go. And you appreciate the music and you can hear it all. You don't black out halfway through the set or whatever. And you remember it. You know, I can't tell you how many shows I've been to where I tell people, I'm like, oh yeah, I went to this concert. Yeah. I saw this person live. And they're like, oh, how was it? And I'm like, I don't know. Like probably good. I was there. That's about it. You know?
Well, actually one of the things and real quick is like, and this is not real. I mean, it's kind of like an addiction, but I remember I was down in Texas and we did a float that after the float, we were going to go see, a really famous band. And so everybody got to the end of the float and like, it was hot and, everybody was drunk. I remember like basically a bunch of us just passing out in this field. And I woke up and I was like, I'm not missing this band. So I went and pounded a bunch of Dr. Peppers as opposed to like drinking more. And I didn't have anything else to drink after that. I just had a shit ton of caffeine. And I remember like there were people who were in the, you know, you could see the people who were sort of just, you know, muddling their way through it, through the concert. But I was sitting there and I was really enjoying it because it was, I mean, it was that band that did the, in the back of a boat, just like we do. I can't remember who that band is. You know that song? I'm gonna play it. Damn it. But yeah, like they were. It was really good. I remember like really enjoying the concert because I was sober.
Yeah.
And yeah. That one. I mean, it wasn't me getting over addiction, but it was like just realizing that like I wanted to wake up, and it made the concert so much better because I was listening to it.
Yeah. Those are the moments.
And now we're going to find a moment. Fucking band. One second. Talk amongst yourselves.
There was the one thing that I cherish most about my sobriety is the clarity that comes with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it took 10, 11, 12 months for it to come back because I was, you know, I'd gone dark for so long. But when it did come back to me, it's like, you know, all of my problems that I would just duck and dodge and obligations that I would, you know, shirk. Everything just became easier and more manageable. Something that was so easy to do was so daunting when I was, you know, half a handle down. I'm just like, I'll handle that tomorrow. 3 months later, no, like, still not done.
Yeah.
But yeah, being able to make clear, conscious decisions without, you know, having any anxiety about it or just, you know, diving back into that bottle is just, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
That the anxiety for me was the big part. I mean, I can't even imagine those. I mean, you know, you guys know those first like few days, weeks, months after coming out and going out presenting as a woman. It's fucking terrifying. It is terrifying. Like, I mean, oh my God. And I, before I came out, when I really had the worst of my addiction, I couldn't even make eye contact with people. I couldn't go to class. Like, I couldn't, I'd go to class and I'd try to turn the handle and I'd have to walk away. I couldn't do it. And like, I can't imagine going through those early days of transitioning like that, you know, the anxiety, the clarity, all that stuff comes back.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, like there were, I think that was for me, I know when I started transitioning, one of my biggest things is I was like, I'm old. I mean, I started when I was 37.
Wow.
So.
Gorgeous.
No, stop. Connecticut, you say? Okay. Sorry. If Mika was here, she'd play the Danny Hits on our guest music, because apparently it happens
trans
enough.
Girls so hot. Trans girls are so hot. It's the best.
Well, I have a whole theory on that too. Oh crap, I forgot what I was saying. Damn it. What were we talking about?
The clarity.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
wow. Did you find the band?
No, I can't think of it. I kept typing it in and it kept coming. It was like, even if I was a little toadstool sitting in the back of a boat, just like we do, even if I sleep all day.
It's going to come to you at like 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
3 a.m. You're going to shoot out of bed and just like scream it out loud.
Yeah, I don't wait. Oh, yeah. It's called Wait. The song's called Ways to Go. Anyways. But, oh man, I forgot what we were even talking about. I don't know. I think my sobriety. Yeah. So when I first started transitioning, I realized that, you know, I'm older. So the effects are not going to hit me as quickly as they would if I were younger. And I wanted to see changes like right away.
Yeah.
So one of the things I started doing was exercising a bunch. Like I'd go out and run a 5K like every other day. But alcohol was like one of those things that kept it. No matter how much I worked out, I'd be like, I'd go do, you know, a core workout, and then I'd go pound 6 beers. And it's like, it essentially wasn't, I mean, like I lost weight, but then kind of like it plateaued. And it wasn't until like around September when I completely cut it out that like I started seeing a lot of the effects, like, come and like a lot of that effort that I'd put in earlier to like make muscle, grow the muscles that they were hiding underneath all that alcohol, I guess fat that I was accruing. But basically seeing those results start to come out was awesome. It's like, oh wow, like it made me not want to drink, because I was like, cool, like if not drinking for a week does this, what does not drinking for a month do? And I saw what that did. And I was like, wow, what about not drinking for 3 months, for 100 days? And then have one drink on New Year's Eve for the day before. I can't remember. Anyways, I think it was sick on New Year's Eve. But yeah, like I think if you can find the benefits, like for me, alcohol was made my skin bad. It gave me pudge around my pudge sections. And basically like find something about yourself that gets better every time you don't drink. It's like I could drink these 6 beers and then tomorrow Danny's going to be like, why'd you drink those 6 beers? I have pudge now. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the hard part about getting older and still drinking as much as I was when I was younger. Is the purge sticks around.
I'm in like the weird category of weight that I never
group love.
When I first
group love.
When I first got
group love.
When I was like first getting sober before I transitioned, I think I was like 210. And that was like the biggest I was. And then I thought that the fat distribution would happen. But like I just lost the weight. And so I don't have like hips or anything. And yeah. I just like a bummer because I'm like, oh my God, I just, that's all I want. You know what I mean? Like,
how tall are you?
I'm 6 feet.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Cause, so I'm
I like to say that I'm 5'11", but I'm 6 feet tall.
I mean, I always say 5'10½" because I'm like, no, don't give me 5'11". But yeah, I got up to, I think I ballooned up to like 215, I think was my heaviest.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and then like I started working out. Excuse me. Excuse me. Goodness gracious. I stopped eating McDonald's and Wendy's every day. And I got down to like 175, 176, but like I could not get below that. And then I stopped drinking for a couple weeks and months, and it just freaking fell off.
Yeah. Alcohol definitely adds that like beer gut, I mean, or whatever you want to call it.
Well, and it's, I mean, so, and the only reason that I keep that I'm saying all these, like these, you know, one-off little positive things is hopefully somebody who's listening, all three people who ever listen to this stuff, our garbage podcast, but it's fun. hey, everybody, we love you. if one of these things resonates with somebody, then hopefully it does some good. But like, yeah, basically seeing the health benefits, but and then, you know, just the sort of the long term that you can say, like, okay, cool, right now sucks, but in a week it's gonna be great, or in a month it's gonna be great. And being able to like just see in the future, it's like I'm gonna like myself so much better. And I guess also one of the other points that I want, that maybe y'all have thoughts on, is I'm realizing I was up in New York recently and was walking around. I tripped coming out of the subway, phone fell out, hit the curb and broke screen, completely unusable. And luckily I kind of had my wits about me because I was walking around Manhattan. A tall trans girl who did not pass very well, apparently. But like, I realized that like, had I been like stumbling around being drunk, like I would have been a pretty easy target for somebody to like to hate on. And I don't know, maybe like that's another reason to you know, basically say, look, I'm not going to drink very much because, or at all, because if I do, I'm going to get drunk and someone's going to hate crime me. But I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the health benefits for sure. Like, I remember looking at pictures of me, like, just using and, like, how hollow I look. Like, I just look, you know, like, the bags under the eyes. Like, and for me, it was because of the drugs I was using, it was weight loss. So, you know, I was, like, skin and bones. Like, being 6 feet tall, when I went into the hospital, at one point, I remember I was down to like 130, 125.
At 6 feet tall?
Yeah, I could barely like walk on my own. Because when you do, I mean, it was the only time I really did meth, but when you do it, you don't eat and you don't sleep. And you don't realize that you're not doing those things, but that it just drains off of you and you look like crap. And yeah, when we're transitioning, we want to see instant results, but you know, stopping drugs or stopping alcohol is like one of the best things to do in order to like make yourself feel better but also look better. You know?
Well, and everybody's like, you know, the whole binge and purge thing, like, you know, like I stopped eating for a bit too because I wanted to lose weight, and I realized that like, yeah, but then you also, I mean, like it always comes from like the muscle mass, and so cool. Like I lost a bunch of weight by not eating, but I lost my butt. And I'm like, cool. Like,
yeah,
I kind of look like it. Like, I mean,
it takes it off the places you don't want it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, Grant, you know, like, yeah, okay, now I'm down to like a size 2, but it also, no one wants to see my skeletal ass. All so, right.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know. I also have realized, that it's really easy when you stop one vice to pick up other vices. Mm-hmm.
What do you mean?
And so, sorry everybody who's watching. Sorry, this is I'll get rid of it. But also, like, I realized recently, so I cut out alcohol. I actually even cut this out for a while. But what did I start doing was fucking eating sugar. Like, I would go and get, like, Pop-Tarts. Yeah. And that I went to the Harris Teeter here and got, like, an entire red velvet cake and one of those giant congratulations cookies. I don't know why I wasn't celebrating anything.
Congratulations.
I needed to say congratulations on not vaping and not drinking. So let me get real addicted to sugar again.
Yeah, that happened when I quit. I found Bluebell pretty damn hard. I was having like a pint every day. And I just, like, when I quit that first time, I had... I was 5'10 at the time. I'm 5'8 now.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I love HRT.
I remember seeing you post about that, and I was so jealous. Like, my feet shrunk, but like my height, I would give anything to be 5'8, 5'6. Oh my
God. Right? Like, no. I was in the subway around all these girls, and I kind of felt like I was chaperoning like a third grade dance or something. I'm like, damn it. Like, and of course. Yeah. Standing out like crazy, then all the guys are just like, why does that dude look like a chick?
That's crazy to me because you look great. Like, I don't see it.
I think they hear me talk and they see my mannerisms and the fact that I'm like walking around like a dude because I have no idea what to do. I'm a trashy redneck from Virginia. Yeah, we'll see. I'm gonna learn. I'm gonna be in New York. I'm moving there at the end of the month, so you'll have to come down and hang out. Teach me how to girl.
Girl, I'm still trying to figure it out. I mean, New York City. Is that where you're moving?
Yeah, I think I found an apartment in like the Lincoln Square, like Lower Manhattan or Midtown Manhattan area, nice. Right over by Central Park.
Cause I'm finally
a billionaire.
I mean, I'm like probably like an hour and a half or 2 hour train ride from New York City.
Oh, yeah.
I love it there. I went in July. I got a tattoo there from a guest spot, of this girl. I got a Pokemon tattoo that I really wanted.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. It's right here. It's kind of hard to show, but yeah.
We'll do it.
We'll do it in the after hours.
Yeah. We can do it in the after hours. Oh, stick around.
Quit.
I was there and I loved it. But being taller is like, it's a bitch. It's definitely, you know, that's like the one thing. I normally pass pretty well. Like, I don't think I've been gendered as a guy. Like, occasionally I do.
We gotta say the standard Mika line. Wait, are you trans?
Wait, are you trans?
You are?
Mika's
got a lot of those.
Yeah, I know, right? Wait, what am I doing here? Yeah.
I mean, and like you get all the girls who are like, oh, I wish I was tall. And it's like, shut up.
No, shut up. No. Yeah, shut up. I hate that. I'm sorry, but I hate that so much.
Quinn, if it makes you feel any better at all, two of our guests have been 6'3".
Listen, I follow a girl who's like, I think like 6'7" or something.
Fuck.
Like something like really tall.
Yeah.
And I feel for them, you know, it's gotta be tough. And I'm like, I'm at that point where I'm tall, but like, it's not like tall enough that it's like an automatic, like, oh, that's a guy or whatever. Yeah. Cause like when I'm out and like a guy holds the door open for me and like, oh, thank you. You know what I mean? Like that kind of shit.
I did that today. I tried to hold a door open for a guy and he goes, oh no, no, after you. I was like, right.
I was like, thank you. Oh, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
Yeah. I do that a lot. Like when I'm out and stuff, because my natural voice is more like this. Like this has always been
still,
the voice that
still,
I had.
Though, that sounds,
what are you talking about?
That sounds like your natural voice sounds like when I'm trying to raise, like, I'm like, hi, everybody. It's like,
well, I don't know if this helped me, but I used to record music. I used to be a rapper and I did a lot of like shows and stuff back in high school and college. It was a lot of fun, but I recorded a lot of music. So a lot of it was like going over the same thing. and having to put different cadence on stuff. And so I'd like record a line and I'd be like, no, let me do it different. And then I'd like raise it or lower it. So I don't know if that's helped me as far as like changing my voice on the fly and stuff, but
Danny, that makes three.
Yeah.
The secret is be a vocalist.
Singers. See, I'm sitting over here like, oh, I'm a drummer. I'm going to learn how to do this. And like, no, drummers are the fucking worst. What's a key? Quinn, we usually like to lighten the mood a little bit with some lighter questions, if that's all right.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Well, I'm going to go ahead and ask my favorite of the questions. This is one that we've asked everybody because I don't know. It's something that I thought of when I was first starting to like find motivation in my transition, and it kind of helped. But apparently everybody's got one. What is your transition theme song?
Oh, yes. I don't know if I had it like early in my transition, but right now, like the one that like I really feel like I connect with is a Kim Petras song, Heart to Break. I don't know. Yes, I just like
a great song.
I love it so I found Kim when she was like 16. Like there was an article written about her as like the first trans person to get gender reassignment surgery in Germany. I remember finding that when I was younger, before I transitioned, and I was like, oh my God, that girl's beautiful. And they talked a little bit about her being a singer. Fast forward, and now she's like this superstar icon, the most gorgeous person in existence. And that song for me is just like, hell fucking yeah, girl.
You know what? One thing I will say. So I was in New York and we went to a gay bar, and they were like, I feel kind of almost like they're appropriating when you're at a gay bar and they're like, not, you know, they're very exclusively like, you know, guy, cisgendered guy, gay, but then they start playing a Kim Petras song. It's like, hang on.
That's
you
our
motherfuckers
song.
Appropriating our shit. Damn it.
Yeah.
It's like, they're sitting there dancing to it. And then, you know, I walk in and everybody's kind of looking at me like, why is there a chick here? And it's like, y'all stop playing our music.
That's mine.
That's ours.
Bitches.
Yeah. It's your own shit.
I don't go play a bunch of Wham. Come on. No, I do actually. I love Wham. But yeah. So Quinn, also, so you're, because you've been transitioning for so long, we have a bunch of sort of either new egg cracks or they're about, like the egg's about to crack, and people listening to this. What kind of advice would you give somebody on, I guess, when you first came out, like, I guess you did your Google search and whatnot, about like that feeling. How did you get over that, that hump of knowing
that's
this is who you
question.
Are?
Yeah, that's a great question. I remember, because I was like so deeply like in this like masculine hole of like whatever, I knew whoever I came out to was gonna be shocked. And I realized, I was like, my question came into my head, I was like, and this is like, no, like this is, everybody has a different story and stuff, but you know, where I was at my age, I remember continuously cross-dressing, looking cute in the mirror, whatever, and then masculine features started coming in, and I was like, oh shit, like this is my moment. And I was like, I had to realize, I was like, what? Like this could be my only chance to experience existing. We don't know what happens after this. We don't know what happens when we pass on. And I think about these people that, you know, these poor people that were trans and never got the chance to be themselves at any point. And I was like, I can't be that person. Like, what if I, like, I, for a while, my goal was like, reincarnation's real, reincarnation's real, and I'm going to come back as a super pretty girl. And that was like what I was going to do. And then I was like, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, this is my chance. And at that point, I was like, you know, at the ledge, and it's like, you just got to take that jump. And it's so scary. But once you do it, because it's something, you know, you can't take back or whatever. But once you do it, it's out there. The initial stuff wears off and people just know you as that. Like, nobody knows me as Zach anymore. That's crazy. But like, everybody here just knows me as Quinn. And that's so special for me. Like, but I never thought I was going to have that. And it's a slow process. It is. But it's crazy. Once you start to like, you get to like 3 months and then you look at the first day and you're like, oh my God, I look so much better. And then you get to a year and you look at 3 months and you're like,
absolutely.
And then you get to 2 years. And you're like, there's a picture of me bowling. I'm coming back from bowling at the lane. And like, I just look like, it's bad. It's bad.
That's
and
awesome.
It's just so cringe. But like, that was part of the experience, you know? And like, it's once you do it, it's like you get the ball rolling and it only gets better from there. It's scary to be like, it's the biggest change that a human being can make, in my opinion. And learning all this new stuff, but along the way you figure it out. You really do.
Yeah.
I had no idea how to do makeup. I still don't know what I'm doing with my hair. Like, I don't. I just don't.
It looks good. You look beautiful.
Thank you. Before we got on here, I was like, I turned on my curling iron and then I turned on my straightener and I was like, what do I do with my hair? And I was like, I put it up and then I put it back down. I was like scrambling the last 15 minutes before we started. It's just doing it. And I know that's so simple and it sounds so cliche, but taking that first step and then the scary part of going out and knowing people might be looking at you, and you kind of learn to form that hard shell.
And tell me if you think the same thing. Is one of my biggest realizations that I didn't have when I was still in boy mode was it was like I always say, it was depressing but also really relieving that I'm not the center of everyone else's universe like I thought I was. People walking by you, if there's 10 things that they can have on the forefront of their brain, you are not like it. Like, you being a trans person is maybe like 11 or 12 on their list. They have, like, they'll look at you for a second, and unless they're a real big asshole, they go back about their day. Cause Jim Bob on the street doesn't really, well, Jim Bob's probably a bigot name anyway. Seth on the street doesn't really have, you know, he's got his own things to do as opposed to sit around and criticize us. But yeah, like, nobody, I was worried everybody was going to give a shit. And the only people who really cared were happy. Mostly.
Right. Yeah. Isn't that funny?
Yes, people
think that these people are going to be, they're going to follow you around the rest of your life, berating you. And, you know, you're going to walk out your front door to go to work and they're all going to be there as a group to be like, ha ha, look at you, you fucking weirdo. But no, even if they do give you shit, it's for less than 60 seconds and then you move on. And then they forget about you forever.
Exactly. Yeah. It's never at that point. Like, there are people, like you said, that are bigots and they maybe spend like 30 seconds on it. And then that is what it is. You're right. It's such a beautiful realization to realize we're not the center of the universe, you know? And all of us have taken that step. And it's really just, to me, it's just one step. It's one step. It's a very big step. But once you take it, and you start that journey, it's like a snowball. It goes downhill and it just keeps going.
The elation that comes with once you tell somebody and you realize that they're happy.
Yeah.
That's a drug in and of itself. Is like, because then you start thinking, oh, this is like, you know, it's like when you think something, you're like, oh, wouldn't it be great if this and this happened? But it's just sort of, you're just ideating on it. It's like, okay, there's no chance it's actually going to happen. But then things start to come together to make it so that thing can happen. And you're like, oh, wow, this may actually happen. I may be able to do this. And all these things that you have bottled up in you about, like, I really want to look good in a dress. I really want to have boobs. These things start to become actualized. And you're like, oh, shit, I can do that. And everybody out there, you can, if you want to, you can do it.
You can. I remember reaching out to trans girls on Instagram, followers, like people that I followed early on. And I was like, I can't imagine what it's like to get to that point. You know, like where I was, I felt so far from it. And like looking at where I am today is like, it's crazy. But it wasn't as far as I thought it was, you know, it wasn't as far fetched an idea. It's like, you can do it. You can be authentic in yourself. And there might be people who disagree or don't like it. I mean, we've seen it on the internet and stuff, but like, those are just keyboard warriors. It's just a fraction of people. You know, I looked at the actual stats of how people view trans people. And for the most part, people don't care. Which is good. I mean, and they shouldn't, you know, it's like, it shouldn't matter. Like there's a portion of people that support, and then there's a portion of people that are against, but like the biggest portion are like, who cares? It's not my life.
It's the vocal minority. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's what they always say is like the vocal minorities like makes you think that they're a lot bigger than they are. They're little chihuahuas. Yeah. And it's always tiny. Like over the weekend, the douchebag at the burger joint that kept calling me Daniel, and then had a shit-eating grin on his face. Guy must have been like 5'3", 5'4", and I was like, "Look, guy, if you weren't behind this counter, you would be getting a 5-fingered facial reconstruction."
You know that, but, dude has a micro penis. That's just the way that it is.
It's like, sorry, I could pull more guys and girls than you could.
I know, it's so funny. Yeah. It's like, yo, like I literally like. People don't realize like some of like I never thought like girls like I've like with cisgendered girls it would be so hard to be with like because I didn't think they'd like me, but like I guess maybe especially in rehab because hormones are going crazy and I lived in like the girls' houses, you know what I mean, like I'm the one with the extra stuff or whatever. People,
you're the one who comes with the strap on stock.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a thermal strap on, and like
none of this aftermarket.
It feels
bullshit.
Like you're never gonna find that, but you will. You know.
Yeah.
It's like being the male guard in a female prison.
yeah, exactly. It's like okay, whatever. But it's. Like, I don't consider myself, like, lesbian, but I'm open to guys. It's just, like, I just can't imagine having a relationship with a guy. But, I mean, I don't know. Who knows? I'm not going to close myself off to anything.
I think we may have to dig into that on in the after hours.
For sure.
It looks like we're at about, like, an hour and a half. So, in this for the regular folks, Bree, do you have any, I guess you want to do final thoughts and then we can jump into after hours?
Yeah, sure. I guess since it was the major topic of this whole conversation, if you feel like you're having, an issue or you're too far gone, you're never really too far gone. If you're too afraid to go to a group, I know there's not a magic word or phrase for you to just jump into it, but I suggest going. It's life-changing seeing people in the same, you know, way that you are, and seeing how people are coping with it, and just getting into a group of mixed people that become the same person in one room for that hour is just perfectly awesome is the only word I have for it, because it's just so mind opening. But other than that, Quinn, you've been awesome. I really appreciate the work that you do. And
thank you guys. It's been an honor being on here. I do want to add that, like, you know, going to, like Bree said, going to those groups, especially as a trans person, can be daunting. you'd be so surprised at the people that are so supportive and cool. And like, they're, you know, those rooms are part, those are the people that's awesome. Like realize they're there to save their lives. And, you know, it doesn't matter what somebody looks like or who they are, regardless of, you know, age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, lack of religion. That's what they say. And for the most part, it's true. So never be afraid.
I don't know, for all the stuff that I said, I really don't have like any sort of wise words. I feel like everybody kind of gets to that point of either realizing it or not realizing it, that they have an addiction and what they need to do with it. I know for me, yeah, like I said, it was in the moment and realizing that I didn't have to stop right now, but I had to acknowledge that I have a problem. That there is an issue right now is I cannot stop myself from continuing to do this thing. And it's almost like, I feel like most people say they have to stop right then. And it's like, I didn't. And I mean, honestly, I think I'm probably better because I didn't, because I let myself, I didn't have the withdrawals right then. But, yeah, I mean, I feel like anybody out there, who is struggling with that stuff, yeah, especially like people who are afraid of transitioning because they realize they're probably going to lose a bunch of people, and they're gonna, you know, relapse into some kind of abuse. I mean, sadly, it does happen, but just know that you're not alone, and it happens to a lot more people than just you. And if you are struggling with some kind of addiction, know that you're not alone either, and that there's a crap ton of people out there who are in, you know, going through the same stuff. And so you can talk to people and, find friends, find connection where you can, especially if it's good connection, like, people who are going to bring you up as opposed to bring you down. But yeah. And also like Bree said, Quinn, you are freaking amazing. Like
such a
wealth of knowledge on all this stuff and just so cool about it. And like I said, thank you so much for what you do in your career. And I think it's very important that we have good people like you in this world. So
thank you. I was super nervous coming on here, but you guys have been super easy to talk to, and I'm so gracious and we're grateful for being on this. You know, this is important. What you guys do is important, you know, and being parents, being trans parents, that's huge and it's beautiful. And, you know, that makes an impact. You know, all of us leave a mark and we all have a story and all of them are beautiful. So thank you guys.
That's wonderful words. I love it. That's a great way to end. So for those who are listening and who are not part of the Patreon, this is where we're going to leave you, unfortunately. But thanks everybody for listening. And if you are part of the Patreon, part of the After Hours, stay tuned and check that out, because we're going to talk some fun, sexy stuff.
Hello,
maybe.
Yeah. Let's go.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening. For Girl Dad Girls, I am that QT Danny B. Whoa. We have Bree St. Marie. It rhymes. And our wonderful guest, Quinn. Quinn, actually, real quick, how do people find you on the internet?
So Quinn Finley is basically my handle across the board. QUINNFINALLY. Instagram. Reddit. I play PlayStation. You can add me on PlayStation if you're good at like Fall Guys or Fortnite. I'm thinking about doing some Twitch, so I guess keep an eye out for that at some point.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Well, everybody who's listening, definitely go follow Quinn. She's amazing. And and if you don't, then get the hell out of here. We hate you. Just kidding. We don't hate you. But anyways, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
This has been a production of Girl Dad Girls Podcast. Check out new episodes every Thursday. If you are interested in knowing more, please email info@girldadgirls.com or find us on Instagram @girldadgirls. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe.